This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Okay, so the time has gone 11 minutes past the hour of 11 o'clock. I call that synchronicity, and whenever I see that balance, I know that isn't zizohamba kahle ngohlelo. So I'm happy. It is our spotlight interview today, and we are speaking to somebody who I believe is very much a part of what I call a global cultural revolution. She is an actress, she is a writer, a painter, and a director of many, many independent films. She was recently selected to join the judging panel of the International Emmys or Oscars?
Emmys.
Ha, I was right. And as I said to you earlier on, I myself am an Anglican. I've never hid that from Power listeners. And so I understand religion from the context of the church in which I was raised. So the first time I ever heard the term, Abo Mama Bemanyana, was from her painting, which was an homage to her mother and many women who are these prayer warriors in the Methodist church. And her painting has all these hues of red and gold and tan, and it just depicts these women in motion, and it's just a seminal work. And that's where I learned the term Abo Mama Bemanyana, and I thought to myself, what a versatile actress. What a versatile artist. She's worked with many other people like Lindy Wesutle on an independent film, on a short story or a short, you know. So she supports other artists to grow. And she does it all without saying too much. I think this is the one artist who says, let my work speak for itself. I did say, in this global cultural revolution, I believe she's a commissar of that revolution. She laughs. In that painting of Abo Mama Bomthandazo in red, I thought to myself, is red her favorite color? We're going to find out. Maba Tumonso is in the spotlight.
Sister Eva. Ninjan.
You? I'm the one who has fallen down. And the lalip so little down. So, what's your name? Frustrated?
Spela Fred.
Okay. Kogumi yano ako ulapa kula high school yet.
Siyajabula ngoba usibusiso unesikhathi hlezi ngasebenza.
Shame, that's nice, sis. Kokwena uhlela apha endlini futhi mezikhaya.
Hayi, usibusiso akathanda ukuthi ngisebenze.
Ke, kakade indoda yenza njalo. Ubuhle bendoda zinkomo.
Ubani ohlala lapha? Kulendlu.
Oh, hayi bethu. Lo samgqibela ukumbona apha esitratweni ngoku umyeni wakhe wayengcwatywa. Before nina nimuvele ngapha.
Umyeni wakhe ushonile.
Uyabonakala sisi uba khuliswe ngenembe. Ndingonge ndihambela kude kulandle.
The spotlight.
Okay, those are just snippets, excerpts of some of the programs she has acted in. It's a clip from Unomalanga and the Witch. A church-going woman in a small South African time who becomes obsessed with her hairdresser neighbor, and then there's a whole lot of twists and turns and intrigues as well. You've also seen her. Happiness is a four-letter word. You've seen that. You've seen Nothing for Mahala. You've seen Mr. Bones with Leon Schuster.
Lord.
Oh gosh.
Lord.
Yeah.
Why?
Ritladi
Boza.
Why? Marana no Musakai, Leon Schuster. But we all gotta start somewhere. You know, A Hotel Called Memory. As I said, you know, she's also a filmmaker, and she is known also for an exhibition, a solo exhibition, Mañano. Somebody just sent me a message. Mañano, Lerato, Mañano. Okay. Not Abo Baba, Abo Mama, but Mañana, but Mañano. Mabatu?
Mañana, yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I see you're wearing pink and yes. Pastels in winter.
Yes.
But my thoughts were red was your favorite color.
It is. It's black, it's red, tans, natural colors. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere in there, a strong pink.
You look beautiful in it, though. You really look really pretty. And it just makes your skin glow. Like,
thank you.
Yeah, you're radiating from where I'm sitting.
Yeah, they did good makeup job.
I don't think so, because I follow you on Insta and I know that you spend a lot of your time all natural.
Yeah.
And you're looking the same. To me, you look very much like who you represent yourself to be every day.
Ah, thank you very much. I appreciate
What it does mean is you drink a lot of water and your skin glows.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Mm. I do drink a lot of water. Aha. Water is life.
Water is life. Yes. It really is. Okay, so acting is life, film is life, and it is your life. And you are a real artist. Like, that is your life.
Yeah, it is. Acting, I'll say it's life because it was my gateway to doing my real love, which is writing and directing.
Right.
I think, for me anyway, that is where the voice really comes to life. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. But everybody needs to start somewhere, and you were just rolling your eyes at Mr. Bones. But acting was the gateway to your passion. So just tell me about that journey. Okay, not Mr. Bones. We'll leave that alone. But no, we won't leave that alone.
No, we don't have to leave it alone.
But I just want to know, you know, because many people say, how do I get to where I need to get to? Yeah. And you know, in love, they say you'll kiss many frogs before you find the one. And so this is also one of those. You'll do many jobs that aren't necessarily a depiction of your true talent.
Yes.
But if it's a stepping stone, you got to get there.
I want to say no. because honestly, I do have quite a deep regret for participating in that project. And a lot of art has impact psychologically, emotionally. Okay. You know, it marks us. So there is value in doing work that is not harmful. Right, so I would hope for emerging artists and creatives that I would hope that they don't have to cross those kinds of paths.
But I want to I want to push back and say, when you are 18, 19, 20 and starting out in an industry where you are unknown and nobody really knows your talent or believes in your talent, you might have to take on roles that don't really express who you are, as a way that you keep working and your name just keeps on being spoken and is front and center of directors' minds until you get to that role.
No, of course, I think you're right. And I appreciate the grace that you're giving me in this regard. I think you are right. Like, in an ideal world, obviously, you'll always do a body of work that you're proud of, absolutely everything that you have done. It's the path, and there isn't a manual, and there isn't a perfect one. Yeah. Some have had better paths than others.
Yeah.
I think you make a very fair point about extending grace to situations that are less favorable. Yeah.
And, you know, and I mean, of course, there's lots of politics in the industry, you know, when you think that somebody like Viola Davis, whom I respect, is only now receiving the accolades when she's in her 50s. Mm. And yet she's done this body of work.
Mm.
But perhaps that's what it takes. You've got to just do the grinding for 20 years until there's that breakup moment. And so it happens to many artists, and I think we shouldn't be harsh.
No, absolutely. We shouldn't be harsh. But I think we can critique, because it's also an important aspect of art.
Mm.
Without constructive critique, we don't grow as an industry. We don't grow as an art form. And there's many layers to it, right? For many people, it is a career, and you do want to get to the peak of your career. But for other people, it's also their ministry, if I may put it that way. So it's not necessarily about the big breakout moment, but about the little works that you do that the impact touch. Society in a positive way.
Okay.
But I don't like to shy away from critique with the grace that you're sort of imbuing into the conversation. Yeah. That's also quite important.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, so who are you then? Are you artist waiting for the breakout, or are you minister using the message in the movie, in the artworks, in the film, to say something?
I think, I am the latter. For me, it's not the career and the big break. I mean, I've had a lot of opportunities to go that route.
Yeah.
But I didn't find it fulfilling. It's quite a thing to be on the cover of a magazine. On a billboard,
wow.
Prime time, but something inside isn't as fulfilled as it could be.
Yeah.
So it's something I discovered along the way for myself as well.
I can recognize that, and I simplify it as saying there are some people who enjoy being famous, and then there are some people who really are artists, and they want the art to be, to speak for itself. So I often use the example of Sade, whom I absolutely love.
Yeah.
Sade doesn't do 1,000 concerts. Mm-hmm. She's not touring all the time. But when she releases an album, we all go crazy. And we listen to those albums for time immemorial.
Yeah.
And yet you don't ever find a magazine that has Sade in it, but you know her name.
Yes.
You know her music.
Yes.
You're nostalgic about that music. You might even curate that music for your wedding or your graduation.
Yeah.
But you don't see Sade because the music must do the talking.
Yeah, and I mean, it's such an interesting ecosystem. It's just an interesting world because there's also a skill level to fame, right? You also have to know how.
You have to market to do it,
right? So it's a skill, and I do respect it, but it's also a gift, if I may put it that way. There are people who just have that star quality.
Mm.
They just have it. It's something I find quite fascinating as well. Yeah. And there are people who, as you say, are just about the art and let the art speak to itself. And then there's Sade who blends those things. You know, you've got a very clear understanding of her look, her style of music, just the language of she has as an artist. She's got star power. She just really does. And then she's talented. Like, that blend is rare. It's powerful. And that's why we celebrate it so much. And we can't quite put our finger on how that X factor thing happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
would it be fair to say you've got elements of that as well? Because when you walk in, you do look like a movie star. Right now, as I'm sitting looking at you, right? And we do know your name. And we do know your voice. And we do know some of your views. But we don't see you everywhere. But we know, we absolutely know you're a shadow in our midst.
I think that's where that
enigma.
The first, the sort of skill thing comes in. I'm very shy, extremely.
Really?
Yeah. What do you mean? There's a big protest here, but no, I am. I'm very shy, and I'm very socially challenged. But I think in the workspace, on a set, I'm
alive.
Yes,
you are. You.
I can come alive there. On the page when I'm writing, I can come alive. There's so many moments where I've seen like people talk about a particular episode or a character or a line that I've written, and they have no clue who wrote that or who directed that specific scene. And when they talk about those scenes, I feel that's how I feel seen, because it's about the work, it's about the story.
Yeah.
So when the story shines, I'm happy, I'm fulfilled, I'm sorted.
My gosh. Okay, let's talk about, now that I've sort of understood your mindset, let's talk about the very public you, not the introvert you.
The
one who does come out on screen.
Okay.
The one we've watched in Happiness is a Four-Letter Word. And when they remade the movie and they changed the characters, I was like, we need to go back to the original. So, and I'm referencing that because when the three of you have that chemistry with Renata and you come alive and we recognize ourselves in your characters, then we don't want people to mess with the template because you've done it so well. So there are many instances where on screen, your presence has fire and radiance, quiet as you are, but it's there.
Ah, thank you.
So what happens to you in those moments where you're not shy?
Okay. I think acting is such a different beast because you're bringing something else to life. Like, there's a whole world that arguably exists between action and cut, you know. Mm. You are those people, those feelings, the situation, you know, that you create, and I think you say it so well, the chemistry between actors is like priceless when you get that moment where you've got the chemistry between the actors. And then there's also a silent chemistry that people don't get to see, which is the crew. And everyone is just vibing. The camera is moving with you at the right time, you know, and that energy just comes to life. I do enjoy it when I am doing it. I guess it goes back to the love of story, and honoring story and honoring the message that the story is trying to put across, okay. And honoring these people that, you know, were written as an idea on a page, inspired by often very real things in whoever the writer's world, you know. Yeah. So it's about honoring that and bringing that to life. And funny enough, a lot of actors are shy. So it's not unusual, to find actors. They're very sensitive and very shy, some of them. And then, of course, you do get the extroverts.
Yeah.
But between action and... That's not you now. Yeah. That's
the character.
That's the character, yeah.
And that's the story you're immersing yourself into.
Yes.
And also, I think... I mean, I'm not an actress, but having sort of been in the public eye, and what you're saying resonates with me, is that people don't understand how much of yourself you pour out in a broadcast or a film or a movie, right?
Yeah.
You're expected to feel or tap into public emotion, even if you're expected to be objective, but you're living this reality.
Yeah.
And there comes a moment where you yourself need a catharsis, an escape.
Yes.
Some silence.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah,
you will not believe it that if I don't have to watch a news bulletin, I will not.
Mm.
I won't do it.
Mm.
Because it's an assault to my senses.
Yeah.
It's too much.
Yeah.
Every single day. Mm. But people don't get that there are just moments of silence. I guess the best way to say it is like a doctor. I know a doctor friend of mine who says, when I come to your house for dinner, I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
Please don't start presenting ailments to me the minute I arrive. And you start saying, oh, I'm glad to see you.
Yeah.
Could you explain this rash? Go and see your doctor. This is not consultation time. That people need to decompress this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all know about the process of getting into character, but we don't speak enough about getting out of character.
Yeah.
And it's a whole thing. I mean, you get training on how to get out of character. I mean, if you're in an argument in a scene, you're really in an argument. You know what I mean? Because you have to access those feelings. So yeah, there is a whole process that you do to kind of like protect yourself, your mind, your body, because it's also quite like it's a physical job. It's you're literally your body doing the work. Mm. So to get out of character, I don't know. I think people are different. I find I've worked with so many actors that are also like such serious extroverts, and they kind of like regain themselves and their energy in being around people, and that sort of connects them to, no, this is me now, like this is who I am when they're interacting with people, and then those who need that space
to quieten down. You've said an interesting thing before we go to the news. You said you must remember in character you are living that person's reality. You're not imagining it. It's written, it's scripted, so you've got to find within you the emotions that express what they're feeling. So if it's an argument that this character is in, you really have to get into an argument and find the rage, the anger, the heightened emotions, the tears if you need to.
Mm.
And so after that scene, you've got to come back to first base, come back to equilibrium.
Yes.
When you've done a really hard scene, a really, really emotionally challenging scene, how long would it take to come back to first base? Whenever I see actors start to cry, like real tears, I ask myself, sure, where did you find those tears? Where did you find that sorrow?
Yeah.
And how do you just snap out of it?
So there's also tools. Like if you've done like drama and stuff, you get tools. There's breathing techniques. There's techniques that you can use to bring tears. You know, there's just a way of breathing that you can do that can summon tears, right? And then there's also the investigation into why is this character feeling this way? What are those, what's their history? So you go into your character's backstory. So you mix these things. You mix technique and you mix real feelings. And then you're also getting something, feedback from your actor that you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
So there's those multiple layers. There are times when on that day, man, that feeling is just not coming, you know? So you rely on the technique to carry the thing along. So it can take 15 minutes, it can take 30 minutes. It depends on the day.
Okay, so the director says to you, Mabato, are you ready? We're going to do the funeral scene now.
Yes.
Where you're going to have to cry.
Yeah.
And then you say, yeah, I'm ready. Or no, give me some time.
I mean, you would have known, you've got a call sheet, you know when that scene is happening in the day.
Yeah.
So you would have prepared. When I'm directing those types of scenes, I'll meet the actors in the morning and be like, okay, this is what we are running through today. How do we pace yourself emotionally to be ready when we get to that point? Because you've only got so many hours. It's cost per minute on a film set.
Right.
So there's things that you may need to prepare way ahead for, to be like, okay, when we get to this point, this is what we need. Everybody quiet. This is what this specific actor needs to get to that point. Yeah.
Okay. So no listening to gangster rap before that scene.
Others do.
Really?
Yeah. Others are like, slap me quickly. You know?
We're in conversation with Mabato Montsho, actress, director, filmmaker. We continue in a moment.
You're listening to Lerato Mbele on Power 98.7.
All right. We're in the spotlight with Mabato Montsho, actress, director, filmmaker. And as you've heard, for her, it's writing the scripts, directing the films that gives her the greatest joy. She describes herself as shy and she speaks through her work. Online, Francis saying, there's only one Mabato Lerato, umama wabantu. Is what Frances is reminding her, reminding us what her name means. The most humble and intelligent woman, says Reva. Yes, I will accept that as well today. And let's find out a little bit more about where she was raised. This fine artist, says Mdu. The little bit I know, you're from the Vaal.
No, I'm from Joburg.
You're from Joburg?
Yes.
Okay, so the Vaal, how does that come in?
I don't know.
Is it me just imagining things?
I mean, I've lived in Carltonville. I think that's close
which is
to,
not the
to Khuzong, but it's not really
okay.
In the
okay,
Vaal.
I now understand why I think you're from the Vaal, but we're not going to go there. Okay, I get it.
Cheme. I get to go Vaal. Get Amona na Joburg.
Okay. All right, tell us a little bit more.
Okay, so I've lived kind of like a little bit everywhere, but I'm from Joburg. I grew up in between Spreadview in the East Rand. My parents are from Soweto, so that as well. And then, like I said, I've lived in Carltonville. My parents worked at a mining hospital.
Right.
So there was a good portion of life where we lived in the mines. And then they worked at another hospital in the Free State, so we lived in the Free State.
Okay.
And then, back to Joburg. But most of my life is
in and around Jozi.
Yeah, in and around Joburg,
And I think it's a wonderful thing to be born and raised in Jozi, even if, you know, your center and your core is elsewhere. But there's just an energy about this town.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I remember it was always so funny when we lived in Carltonville that when we went home, it was to Soweto. Like, you know, because people don't think of we going home to here. But I love being from Joburg. I like the melting potness of it. I like the different perspectives and I like the open-mindedness of the people here because we've lived with people from everywhere. So the energy here, for me, I like it. It's modern. It appreciates modern things, but still got a foot.
It's a crucible.
Rooted.
It's a crucible of ideas and cultures. A melting pot, truly, is Johannesburg. And you cannot come to Johannesburg and leave completely unchanged.
Your dream has a potential of doing something here.
Okay. And so I think, you know, and also this is, you know, we often say jazz has its crucible in, or its roots, its genesis in Manenberg, but Sophia Town as well has that history. And, you know, when was it? This weekend, apparently we're commemorating Can Temba. And so all of that kind of comes from the Joburg side of expression and resistance and revolution. And I think this is where you can be an artist and say, I've got something to say.
Oh, yes. I mean, just by virtue of platform, you know what I mean? I mean, just even from the fine art point of view, if you go downtown to Joburg, there's all those buildings that are just housing artists.
August House, you know, I know of, yeah.
There's your August House, there's the one in JP, there's Transverke, there's Constitution Hill, there's all these buildings where you just know it's just full of artists, which means there's just like such an a robust exchange of ideas and creativity. And then, of course, for me, for my industry, you know, for film and TV, this is where we are.
It's where it is. Okay, so I said earlier on, you've worked on a lot of independent films, and I was really curious to find that you worked with Lindy Wesatle. Mm-hmm. It's not so much the Lindy Wesatle short story that that I want to focus on, but it's the fact that it was such an important moment for her as a script writer and this animation. But then she tapped into you to bring it life, and then it won a huge award. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, is Mabato that person who lifts other artists? Is that also part of your ministry?
Oh yes, we have to, especially in the independent film side of things. I think we're able to survive and create the work that speaks to our heart precisely because we help each other. I mean, there's WhatsApp groups upon WhatsApp groups. You know, one WhatsApp group I'm in is just Black female directors. Mm. Another WhatsApp group is Swift sisters working in film and television. Another WhatsApp group. There's like this network of people that you can call on to be like, hey, I need help, I need a favor. And then besides I need your talent. You know, I need you to show up and help me bring this idea to life and make it beautiful. Because, you know, we want our films to be beautiful. Yeah, they must say something. Yeah. We also want them to be beautiful, you know. I love collaborating.
Yeah.
I think in the past month, I've read about 14 scripts just for work and other things. And then you see these like gems and you're like, man, for free, call me. Yeah. You know, this needs to be out there. This needs to come to life.
Except it can't be for free because, as you explained, it's very expensive just making 1 minute of film.
Yeah.
So you can be magnanimous, but it's not profitable because if you want those films to be seen, mm-hmm. it cannot be for free. So just talk to us about the economics of filmmaking.
Okay, so what I mean when I say buy for free is that I could offer my time, you know, with the view of back end. I know people say short films don't make money or these independent films don't make money. And to a certain degree, I agree, it is true. But I think because I have found my niche and my market, I kind of know how to recoup to at least break even before I can even begin to talk about profits. But the money thing is an issue. We've got so much talent. I wish we had the same passion and investment, right? There's a certain voice that you won't see because it doesn't make it onto the streamers or to the broadcasters who also have a mandate about the kind of work that they must do. They're very audience focused and they're not like trying to build auteurs or, you know, your next so-and-so, right? But when you are kind of like working in the film festival space, you see those voices, you see those brilliant artists that you're thinking, wow, if the private sector could take, you know, the risk in investing in this person until they make their breakout film, we would have so many amazing films with different styles and different voices.
Okay, you're going to forgive me for what I'm about to do next because fair.
Okay.
But I do it often because it's the only way it kind of lands in people's minds. It lands in my mind.
Yes.
Okay. So the issues you're raising now are issues that have been brought up by the Shonda Rhimes, even Tyler Perry. That's why he built his own studios. But as you're speaking, I'm like, gosh, could she be the African version of an Ava DuVernay? You know, who was making films all her life until she made Selma. And then suddenly everybody awoke to the fact that, my gosh, who is this Black filmmaker in the US?
Mm.
And then she then leveraged the new platform after she made the seminal movie, Selma, to then start tapping into money in Wall Street, money in Hollywood, but then collaborating with people like Oprah Winfrey to start making new films. Mm-hmm. And now she says, I only make films that matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
I like my films to be supported by people, by producers, because producers are the ones who pay for it, who are like-minded. And if I'm going to make films about the experience of being Black and young or correcting and reversioning history, I really need a community of black investors into film. And so suddenly there's an activism in the filmmaking, even if the stories themselves are about love or community.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you're the same hue, because as I look at you, as I listen to you, I'm thinking, gosh, there's something quite familiar here.
I think it's the story, certainly in South Africa, for many, I'm going to say black female filmmakers, because that's who I speak to a lot, right? If you look at Ava's journey, how she even gets to Selma is, I stand corrected, but she did a film called Middle of Nowhere that did very well at a particular film festival. Right? That's where like the economy of new and emerging filmmakers can break ground at these film festivals. That's where the money goes, the distributors get to see your work, right? We kind of have or are building that kind of economy where where there's like multiple places for your work to be seen so that somebody can be brave enough to invest in your money. Yeah. Okay. But like I said earlier, us having these collaborations is helping us to begin to do that. But Ava, if you read some of her latest interviews, is still raising money in the way that she was doing it when she was beginning. It's still it's not as easy as, say, a Tarantino. It would be for a Tarantino.
Yeah.
Also because she is a black, she is a woman.
Yeah. And the story she's telling.
And the story she's telling, because the one who gives you the money wants to dictate what you do get to say and not say, right? But I don't want it to sound like we are just simply victims of our situation. Yeah. Especially if you look at the independent landscape, there is a lot of work being done, and I hope we do break that ground. Where I think we can change our sort of the way we see ourselves is to walk away from the term artist a bit, just a bit, or the idea of being artist, you know, this esoteric, you know,
this thinker, this person living in their head,
yes, who is not part of society, who is not part of a labor problem, you know what I mean? And we really start to think of ourselves as cultural workers in the space, right? Like those artists of the 80s. And maybe if we started to think like that, we could align ourselves with important labor movements that would help us break free.
I don't want us to stay on this one for too long,
sure,
but you've said a few things that are interesting to me. He who pays for the film also wants to dictate what the film is. And so, you know, money is money.
Yes.
And when you're going to invest 10 million, 20 million into a film.
Yes.
Yeah, you want your 20 million back.
Oh, yes.
And so somebody can't say to you, I'm going to tell a story about Queen Nehanda and the mysticism. And you think to yourself, who's going to watch this and am I ever going to get my money back? So at the end, commercial imperatives start to kick in. And one of the reasons we keep seeing the same kinds of stories on streaming services, Netflix, Showmax, etc., is because those kinds of films and series bring in audiences. Mm. Those audiences bring in advertising. That advertising brings money back to the producer. And so suddenly, you know, things just kind of become bland. We start seeing the same kinds of story because it's believed
there's
that's what sells.
Yeah.
There's this whole thing that says, do what sells.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes troublesome for a real artist, filmmaker, director, because you either have to make films that sell or make films that target your heart.
I don't agree that films that target our heart don't sell, you know. And I also don't agree that you can't be specific about messaging for your people and not make it sell. Like any American film you're going to watch now, there's going to be an American flag. There's going to be promotion of the American
the values
dream or their ideals and all of those things. They find a way to put it there and still sell, right? I think we must walk away from the idea that if something has substance, it automatically is going to be dull and boring and serious. Or no, that's not true, right? And then there is a business model in doing filmmaking, right? You do have to think, so there's the creative aspect, you're creating this work, but you also have to think this is the budget. I mean, like I said to you, cost per minute. So there's no way we're not thinking about how do we make this?
Yeah.
Who are we making it for? And what is its value chain? So now that we've taken out cinema, because things are now going straight to streamers. So that's one part of the thing gone. But also when we go and talk about your Netflixes, like you've mentioned, look at how much work is there. Are you telling me it's all profitable? No. So there is something in creating a large volume of work, and then there are going to be hits in there. So that is why the investment part of it is important. It's going to be risky, like investing in anything, but just the amount of work you're able to do means out of, if you're only making 10 films, how many chances do you have of making a hit? Yeah. But if you've made 50, are you telling me nothing in there is going to work? Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just got to be prolific.
I mean, we do think about the business. I think it would be silly of us not to. I mean, this is job creation. Yeah. It's our living. We're not living in the stars about it.
So there is an aspect of being practical.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to.
Okay.
You have to.
I love that. You're not just a filmmaker. You're also an artist. That was a revelation. And hence the Mañano.
Yeah, to me
too. That solo exhibition. Because I was like, what's going on here? Mañano. And I love the art, right? As I'm looking at it, but I'm like, why is it called Mañano? And then that's when I learned about it. So there's quite a bit going on there. One is the fact that you paint. Two is that, you know, you're not painting at home for therapy and you're actually exhibiting this work. And in this particular exhibition, it was a homage to prayer warriors, these women of the Methodist Church. And from what I understood, and you can correct me, it was a homage to your mother and many of the women who raised you.
Yes, I mean, it's funny that I was painting for my own sanity, honestly, you know, and then obviously the social media, so I've posted some of these things. I mean, I've been painting since primary school. We had art class in primary school.
Okay.
I remember the first exhibition I did was sending work to Japan. So our art teacher was very serious about, you know. So in primary school already we knew that this thing.
You can do it.
Yeah, it's respectable. You know what I mean? So I've been painting throughout my life, drawing, whatever. And it really was just a private thing. And then when I posted it on social media, I was invited to do this exhibition. So it was a revelation to me too. I don't want to lie.
Okay.
But yes, I was paying homage to my mom, my grandmothers. But also most importantly, what fascinated me about the Women's Mañano was how it was formed, right? These women said, wait a minute, why can't God have a mission directly to us? Why must it go through men first, right? So they formed themselves, they organized themselves as a group to be like, okay, God can speak to us directly and we can have mission in society as women, a collective of women. And they started out wearing the nurse's uniform and then they changed it into this military
Which is why it has uniform. Kind of epaulets.
It used to be just white, right? Uh-huh. And then when they saw the British army, they were like, okay, we are soldiers. We are soldiers of God, right? Hence the red and the... It's all symbolic. It's got the meanings. But they were inspired by the idea of being soldiers and they have their own constitution. So I thought, no, man, this is powerful. You know, it's not just a bunch of demure women praying. These are women who said, God can speak directly to us and we can have a mission and impact in society and we are going to do it in military uniform. I was so moved.
And the context also, why women would have to have said that 100 years ago is because it's only recently that women started heading up churches, becoming priests.
Yeah.
And I think it was the Methodist Church that appointed its first female bishop. So it's a very recent phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Women in ministry.
I mean, there's that part in the Bible. I'm not good in the Bible. I know the parts that I know, so little incorrect. But where is like, even if you have, maybe it's like prophecy, you know, you must keep quiet. If you're, you know, the men will discuss. And if you've got a question, go ask your man at home. Mm. So it was like a disruption of that. So I thought it was quite powerful. And as much as I intellectualized it afterwards, it really did just start as like a haunting. I just kept seeing these visions, you know, and I felt better when I painted or drew them, then they would give me respite. So it started really there, like a spiritual experience for myself.
And why they're so beautiful, the paintings themselves, is because the women are of different shape and proportions and size. So it is like you're at a Mother's Union Mañano meeting. We don't see the faces clearly. from the exhibition. But we see the uniform clearly. We see their gestures clearly. We can see that they are clapping hands. They are singing. Mm-hmm. They are dancing. You can see all of that in motion.
Yes.
And you can see these very stark red and white uniforms. Mm-hmm. And so there's a way in which also you've depicted the power, the mobility, the transient nature of them as well.
Oh, thanks. You write that so nicely. I'm going to ask you to please write that down for me. I'm going to use it for in my resume.
I love that. Why I'm saying, because until I saw that, I know the Methodist Church. Yes. I've even been to one or two services. I'd never heard the word manyan.
Yes, which means to come together.
Until I saw your painting.
I'm glad
and it stayed with me.
Contribute something. Yeah.
But red, let's talk about that. Not just the red in the manyano.
Yeah.
Red. The berets you
the
wear.
The red is the color of love.
Yeah.
What?
Tell us about your love for the color red. Hey, look, Power FM, we've got red all around us.
Yeah, I mean, it's a powerful color. It's the color often identified with revolution. Okay, so for me, I think I know what you're asking me, but I don't know. For me, to be openly a member of the EFF, it was at the time when if you were creative and you were not ANC, you really could be sidelined from work and all of those things if you supported any other thing. And I had a problem with that, you know, because before that, I was happy to just go to the ballot, vote, and pelela lapo. Yeah, bo. I mean, I know who I voted for. I know when there's a match where I go. I was fine with that. But I had a problem with this idea of artists automatically being assumed to be ANC, as though the political identity of the cultural space
is ANC.
So I thought, no, I'm going to openly support this party that is the only party that was like unapologetically concerned with the plight of Black people. Which are things that I believe in, the justice, the emancipation of Black people. I thought it's a problem that we must hide this thing. Yeah.
And it's an important thing you're raising. I don't need us to go into ideology.
Yes.
But this idea that artists must be aligned. Why can't we just let artists be free to say what they need to say? Because life is complex. One day you may agree with ANC politics and the next day you might not agree. But why should you be afraid to speak your truth? Because you're living the lived
experience.
We are
people. We are part of this society, you know. And before 1994, nobody had a problem with an artist talking about a political party. So why is it a problem after 1994? Yeah.
And that speaks to the heart of democracy.
Yes.
Okay. And this is why also I use the word, she's a commissar for the global cultural revolution.
I am in the cultural battalion.
You know? But I said an international cultural revolution, because you're being appointed to the international Emmys speaks to something about how you lend your voice to Africans on an international stage.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's quite a thing to be able to work from home, but your work can be at an international space, which was always a dream of mine. I love being here and I want to stay here. But it is important for us to inject our voice into the global arena, because everybody seems to talk
about
us. Yeah.
Without talking to us.
Without talking to us and without listening to us.
Okay, we've run out of time. One of the reasons you're here today is because you're talented, but also because you're the curator of the Basha Uhuru Festival, Freedom Festival. So firstly, what is Basha Uhuru? And secondly, what does it mean to be a curator, and where can people see all this wonderful work?
So Basha Uhuru is a concept that came with Khaisang Satere. She was a curator at Constitution Hill at the time. So it's been an annual festival. I'm not sure, I might say the wrong thing. It might be in its 12th year.
Okay.
So I'm doing the Visions of Freedom Film Festival. So there's multiple stages, music, art, film, craft. I'm doing the film festival. And this year for the film festival, we are focusing on student films.
Oh, wow. And that's the 29th of June, is it?
That is. The film festival, the Basha Uhuru Festival in total is from the 27th to the 29th of June. And the film festival specifically is on the 28th.
Okay. And those are young up-and-coming students. There are stories that are being told.
Yes.
And you've put it together. What are some of the messages? Because as you curate, you're deciding which messages, which imagery should people really be internalizing. So for you, what are the messages?
So I was inspired by the idea that the Youth Month was inspired by students And that is why this year I was like, guys, what if we focused on student films? Because 48 years later, students are still facing the same crisis. Yeah. You know, access to education, access to quality education, schooling conditions and all of that. I wanted to hear from them, the students. And these films cover a wide range of things that are faced by the youth today. Addiction, voting. There's one film that's talking about, you know, the impact of voting. Coming-of-age films. Yeah. And questions around masculinity, femininity, right, and so on.
I read somewhere, and I'm going to paraphrase, that there's nothing more threatening to patriarchy than a woman who knows her own mind. But there's nothing more beautiful to an evolved society than a woman who knows her own mind.
Ooh, I love that.
You are a woman who knows your own mind. Some may find you threatening, but the rest of us find you beautiful for that mind and for that artistry. Mother of the Nation, continue. Mabatu Monsu.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.